Welcome to the Jet Setting Family Travel Podcast. My name is Rod.
And I'm Jess.
And along with our six-year-old son Santi and three-year-old daughter Nora, we sold all of our stuff, quit our jobs, and have been on a worldwide full-time travel adventure.
For 11 months. That is crazy.
It has gone by so fast. But we wanted to dedicate this episode to answering questions that we've been asked for the past couple of weeks now.
Yeah, we're really excited. We haven't done one of these in a while. I just can't even believe it's been 11 months since we started traveling. I remember filming one of our first podcasts in a closet in Hawaii.
And now we are coming to you from sunny Playa del Carmen in Mexico.
Yes. And we're just excited to reconnect because a lot of times we just kind of choose what our episodes are going to be about. It's a way for us to really connect to what you guys want to know. This is always a really fun episode for us because a lot of times on a podcast, you know, we kind of just pick who we're going to interview and what we're going to talk about. And there's not a lot of feedback from you guys. And so a mailbag episode's a way in the podcast world to really get you guys involved. And it's always fun to answer questions that maybe more than just one or two people have.
Yeah. So to everyone that submitted your questions, thank you. And we hope that we can provide the right answers. And if you have any questions after this episode, feel free to reach out to us at hello@thejetsettingfamily.com. Or you can find us on social media @thejetsettingfamily. We're pretty active there. So you can send us a message there. So without further ado, let's get started.
Ooh.
Question number one comes from @SylvieMC, and that is, when did you start traveling as a family?
I would say officially full-time, it's been 11 months. We left in June of 2018, but we have always traveled quite a bit. I wouldn't say quite a bit.
Yeah, it was in about April of 2017. We had gotten back from a vacation in Mexico. It was my longest vacation that I had ever taken. It was 2 weeks long. And during that time, we were just sitting there thinking, wow, this is amazing. You know, our kids were young. They were having fun. I was getting time to spend with them throughout the day. And we just kept thinking to ourselves, we need to prioritize travel in our lives more.
And so we started traveling quite a bit more in 2017, but more like local trips in Colorado. You know, We did Aspen, Durango. We went to, where else did we go?
We went to the Great Sand Dunes. We went
Glenwood Springs.
We went to Moab in Utah.
So we did a lot of local trips. At the time, we still had a home base. Rod was still working full time. So it was really just when the kids head off school or on a quick weekend trip that we would travel. And prior to that, we really only took one vacation a year that we did as a family. And so, yeah, it wasn't really till June of 2016 that we really ramped up. Since then, we have been on over, do you remember? How many flights?
It's over 25 flights. We've been to 15 plus countries. It's like 60 some cities.
And that's in 11 months. So it's been busy.
But one of the things that we really wanted to start with and inspire people is that you don't have to go far in order to have an adventure. And that's how we started. We were just in our backyard going on local trips. And now we've transitioned to kind of international trips. But, you know, it's not about how far you travel. It's just the fact that you're doing it and you're doing it together that matters.
Yes, it's definitely a great way to bond as a family, regardless of where that destination is.
Question number two comes from Sometimes I Vacay. And she asks, how do you pick where you're going next?
Oh, Sometimes I Vacay. That's a I wish that we had a better strategy. We chose Southeast Asia first. I will say that due to cost. We were really nervous taking off on budget and how we were going to manage this. And we knew Southeast Asia would be very cost effective for our family because once we took the big long haul flight to actually get there, flights in between countries is really, really cheap. Accommodations are cheap. And so that was the reason we picked that location to start. And it was a place that neither Rod or I had been. So we really wanted to start exploring something completely new together. Since then, it's gotten kind of tricky, I would say. Our plans change very quickly. Like, for example, it is now April, and we had planned on going to Europe for June and July. That was our plan. We were really excited about it. And comes to find out when we do our reach out, because for us, a big way we save money is by collaborating with hotels. A lot of hotels were coming back saying, We'd love to have you in August or September, but June, July doesn't work.
It's their high season.
It's their high season. And we talk about that if you, anyone's interested in our course, The Art of the Pitch. We talk about the importance of trying to reach out that when it's not high season. And so for us, partially what dictates where we're going next is where we can get collaborations and trying to avoid high season to an extent. Mm-hmm. So we decided in the past couple of weeks, like, you know, Europe's really not a great fit for us in June and July, and we need to readjust our plans. So that kind of dictated, we thought, okay, South America is still kind of warm.
Yeah, they're going into their shoulder season. Their low season is in our summer, their winter. So we thought, hey, temperatures are chilling. We've been in the beach a whole lot in these past 11 months. So let's go check out South America, go check out some mountain regions and explore that part of the world as well.
So I think the reality for us at this point is we want to see almost everywhere in the world. So it's not like we are very specific of we have to go to these places. A lot of it is, where is it off season? And there's benefits to off season. One, it's easier for us to get collaborations. But another huge benefit is things aren't as crowded and mm-hmm. prices are cheaper. So it's when we're not having collabs, we can get an Airbnb sometimes at half the rate on an off season than it would be at high season. So things like that come into factor. Weather comes into factor as well. Mm-hmm. I don't mind fall and spring like we're about to do. I do not want to be anywhere in the dead of winter for the most part, unless it's like
we're
tropical.
We're from Colorado where we're used to the blizzards, but
no, thank you.
We would prefer not to have that if we could choose it.
If it was like a week or something skiing, I'm fine. But mm-hmm. I don't want to be carrying my kids around in the streets in the winter. So weather comes into play, but we're really flexible. We have a couple collaborations that we work with, Royal being a huge one, that we kind of plan our trips around them and when they need us. And so that kind of breaks up our regions because we work with them right now about every quarter. So mm-hmm. we come back to the United States every quarter to work with them. And then typically that launches us to think, oh, we should head a different region now. But we do try to stay in a region once we're there to save money on flight costs.
Yep.
So a lot of it's just budgeting, I guess.
Yeah.
Which goes into one of the next questions.
That is from Kara Savage 87. What would you say your weekly budget for travels is?
Oh,
and that's a little
hard.
Bit of a tricky question, because it is going to be dependent on the location. But in terms of, you know, how we budgeted for our trip, we are primarily using the savings from all of the things that we sold, our cars, all of our furniture, all of our stuff.
We couldn't sell our house, so we rented it. So we do have some rental income coming in as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess on average over these past 11 months, our budget is typically at around anywhere between $1,000 to $1,300 per week. So that's about, you know, $4,000 to $5,000 a month. That's what we kind of budgeted for 1 year of travel. And since then, we've been able to subsidize a lot of those costs and make that cheaper based on collaborations and paid work. And, you know, that's what we're hoping will continue to propel us further into full-time travel, is being able to have more paid photography work, more paid social media kind of influencer work. And hopefully, if our income increases, then we can kind of adjust our budget to be able to reflect that kind of additional income.
There's things to note, though. We always look for a two-bedroom place, which increases cost. We like to be close walking distance, so that increases cost to like a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
We do eat out more than the average family, I would say. We've gotten lazy in that department.
Yeah, and with fast travel, when we're booking transportation every week or so, whether that's bus tickets, whether that's flights, that can add up as well.
So that's included in the estimate Rod gave,
yep.
is our flights and transportation. So that includes everything. I think that you could do cheaper than we do. I'm not going to lie. If you're
yeah.
willing to eat sandwiches and ramen and really cut on food.
Yeah, if you want to do slow travel, we know a lot of people that stay 1 month in one specific place and they're able to get a discount on accommodations by doing so. And that cuts down on costs dramatically. So it just depends on what your needs are, how quickly you want to travel, and you know what kind of food, what kind of experiences and tours that you want to have in a given city or location, and where in the world that is too. That, you know, that'll dictate your budget too.
Yeah, definitely. For us, I would say like in Southeast Asia, we ate out almost every day because it was so cheap to eat out. And mm-hmm. we did like laundry out. We outsourced it.
Yep. Then we got to Australia and we ate a lot of sandwiches and ramen.
Because it was just way more expensive. So we are willing to cut back on those things depending on the country. But if we're in a cheaper country, I feel like we just get lazy and it's just easier to go out and eat for a couple bucks than it mm-hmm. would be to buy groceries and cook ourselves.
Yep. But okay, next question comes from the Adventure Clan, and that is, do your kids miss consistent friends?
Oh, this is a hard one.
It is a hard one because the answer is yes.
Santi, definitely. Santi was in school prior, and he has his little friends that he FaceTimes from back home, and he misses them. And now that we're in Mexico, this is the longest we've stayed anywhere, really, since leaving. It's been 6 weeks, and we put the kids in school here. And I know it's going to be hard leaving again because he did make some friends at school. We, you know, right now, I think it's important for him to bond as a family with the sisters, and we meet up with travel families along the way, and we try really hard to keep in touch with the friends we have back home. But we do know for us, as much as we adore full-time travel, eventually we will settle back down, hopefully in about a year or two, have a home base and travel from there, just because Santi and his friendships, and we value that a lot. Nora is still so little. She talks about her cousins who she misses a lot.
And she's super shy too.
So, but she like cries every day we take her to school and doesn't really care to make friends yet. She's three. She only wants mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And so she's at a really good travel age because she's no longer napping. She goes with the flow and she only wants mom and dad. So for us, 3/4 going into 4 is like a really good age, we think, for travel. Granted, she won't remember it.
But yeah. The nice thing is, you know, we have FaceTime and we have availability to do video chat with Santi's friends and with family. So that kind of helps a little bit, but that also makes him sad because it makes him want to be there. So.
And we have been blessed. His like best friends flew out to visit us in Australia and they're mm-hmm. going to fly out to visit us again over the summer. And so we definitely work really hard to maintain those friendships in his life.
Yep, for sure. The next question comes from the full-time family. That is, I would love to hear tips on traveling with sensory processing disorder or kids with sensory needs. So for those of you that don't know, Santi does have sensory processing disorder. That means that he's a little bit more, how would you say it?
So for Santi, his sensory system, so like, you know, your senses, taste, sound,
Hearing,
all of those senses, they're like not, I would say, calibrated properly with his brain would be the word.
He has a lot of sensitivity to things like loud noises or things that look different, weird textures, etc.
But he also seeks more sensation than other kids. So he's always touching things. And so sensory kids either crave sensations or they avoid sensations more than the average person. It's just, I always say it's almost like a piano that's out of tune. Like he's playing the right notes, but like it's just coming out wrong. Like he just can't feel or hear things the same as the average person.
So while we were in Colorado, Jess mostly did a lot of, you know, occupational therapy work with Santi, and we were able to get to a place where he learned some coping mechanisms and we learned some parenting tools that, you know, we've been able to implement while we travel. And one of those is flexibility. We try to stay flexible. We try to avoid kind of things that will increase his sensitivity to certain senses. So if it's loud noises, if it's places that have very distinct kind of smells, we know that he might have a possibility of getting kind of deregulated, right, and getting a little bit anxious. So we try to sense how he's feeling when we're in a different place. And if we need to, you know, take a step back and go to somewhere quiet, and just kind of comfort him if he needs that space and that time, then, you know, we have the flexibility to do that.
For Santi particularly, his biggest challenge is foods. And so that can be challenging on the road because it leaves us with very few food options. He has a very, very, very limited diet of just a handful of foods he will eat. So we just know that and we plan ahead, especially when we went to more remote locations. We would pack a bag of things we knew he would eat. We supplement with Pediasures if we aren't sure if he's getting enough nutrients. So we just remain flexible. Like Rod said, when we were in the thick of sensory processing disorder and we would travel with headphones for him We would travel with something that smelt strongly, like an essential oil he could put on so that he could smell something if things were like hard for him. Mm-hmm. So we definitely had more tools back then than he needs now. Now that he's older, thankfully, he's been able to verbalize more what his needs are. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when we were in Vietnam, we went to the Cu Chi tunnels. And towards the middle of the tour, there was like a gun range and it had like really loud, sudden shooting of the guns. Yep. And we could hear it as we got closer. And he just made it very clear, like,
he wasn't ready. He didn't want to go.
He's like,
there.
My body can't do this. And it's making me really nervous. And the sounds were affecting him. And so we just asked our tour guide if we could loop a different way and avoid that area. So it's just small little things like that. I think that travel, though, for him as a sensory kid has been incredible because his sense, like he is experiencing more things sensory wise than he ever would have back home. You know, when we walk through markets, there's different sights, different sounds. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost been like OT on the road. I would say if you are about to travel with your child and you do already go to occupational therapy, that's something definitely talk to your therapist about, and they can sit down with you and give you tips and tricks to take with you. Because I think as a parent, the most important piece is for you as a parent to be empowered, to have the tools to help your child.
Yep. Next question comes from The Wallace Reboot. How do you balance really experiencing a place while doing work with sponsors? That is a really, really tough thing that we've struggled with because a lot of the work that we do does, you know, help us financially, and it involves going to a location, taking pictures of us experiencing that location. And there's a lot of factors that are dependent on, you know, are there crowds? How much time do we have in that place? And juggling all of that while still making sure that the kids are having fun, that we are enjoying ourselves, and that we are creating memories that don't necessarily have to do with, you know, taking pictures and videos and actually being immersed in the culture. That's been a bit of a challenge for us, to be honest, but we've been working on it. And I think one of the best tips that we can provide is setting aside goals for a particular outing. So if you're working with a, you know, collaboration on a hotel and you're there for 3 days, understanding what your requirements are so that that first day you can get all of that done and then, you know, take the next 2 or 3 days or however long you have left to be able to enjoy that time and to be able to go out and experience things outside of a hotel if you need to.
Yeah, we definitely have tried really pushing to work hard the first half of our trip lately. Mm-hmm. So the kids can enjoy the rest, as Rod said. Another thing I think we have finally learned is to sometimes just say no. We used to try to collab with anywhere when we were first starting. And now sometimes, you know, we'll be in a city where it's really cheap and we can get an Airbnb for $30. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's really no, like, there's not many hotels in that region that would be fun to photograph in general.
Right. And they might only give, you know, 1 or 2 nights of a complimentary stay. So at that point, we started realizing that might not be worth it. Let's just pay for an Airbnb and not have the pressure to have to deliver content for that collaboration.
So I always ask myself, is it a place I'd A, be excited to photograph and easily with the kids? Because if it's just a hotel room, that with kids can get tricky. Mm-hmm. Oh, 2, is it long enough? We try to say, you know, we have a kind of like a minimum night stay. We'll do at this point because it's mm-hmm. tricky to already move with kids. And if you're going to pack and repack just for a night or two and be working that entire time, unless
you get burned out real
quick. giant resume builder, we would probably say no, just because we've just kind of learned that sometimes it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from That Rogers Family. How many hours a week do you work? Is it while kids are sleeping or do you divide and conquer? So the actual, you know, picture taking, that is, or the content creation, that's one part of the job. But then you also have editing. We also manage the blog. We record podcasts. We post to Instagram. There's a lot of additional work that has to get done. And something where our biggest key to that is doing that when the kids go to sleep. So pretty much every night after 8 p.m., between 8 p.m. and midnight to 1 a.m., we are working our butts off. when we have, you know, a heavy workload, then we do divide and conquer. So I guess the answer to your question is we do both. Sometimes Jess will take the kids to the park while I record a podcast episode or while I edit one, or I go take the kids somewhere when she needs time to edit. So it's just being flexible, understanding what our requirements, what the things are that we need to do in that given week, and managing our time wisely so that our kids don't just see us kind of working away the day while they're kind of wondering, okay, what are we doing? And when are we going to go out and do things, right? Because that's not the reason why we're traveling. The reason why we're traveling is to spend more time together doing things. And if that means that we have to put in a little bit more hard work at nights, then that's what we do. And that's what we've been doing.
Yes. And I think it's so hard when you're in the Instagram world not to get in this rabbit hole, because we struggle with it every couple months. And then we realize it that with Instagram, it seems like the more you're on, the more you're engaged, the faster you grow to some extent, or the more engagement you get back, which is awesome. But then we will get into that rabbit hole where it's like, that's all we do. And then we're not really present with our kids. We're on our phone so much. And so we've really been trying in the last month to do that less and to kind of set boundaries. Mm-hmm. But then it's hard because you feel like you're failing these people who are taking time to engage with your page and to engage with you. So we're still trying to find that balance with the Instagram piece. I feel like with the podcast and the blog, we have a very structured schedule of night work. Mm-hmm. With the Instagram, keeping up with comments throughout the day, we still try to find a balance of being available yet not being not available to the people that are actually around us.
And that really does lead into this next question from The Traveling Caterpillar, and that's, how do you manage our social media? And you have to put in the effort to be engaging and to look at other people's content, to be able to develop and foster that community, because that community is important to us. So we do take time to post, you know, as once a day if we can on Instagram, and then take that first hour or so to make sure that we are responding to comments. We are looking at other people's content. And if, you know, Jess is doing that, then I'm going and playing with the kids or finding something to do. So it's just staying flexible and making sure that we can find that balance between getting the social media work done as well as spending time with our kids, either both of us at the same time or one of us at a time. Then that's what we'll do.
And we fast travel typically. So we're moving every week, and it seems to be about every 4 to 5 weeks, we will hunker down for a 2 or 3 week period. And that's typically our catch-up time, where mm-hmm. we're really trying to catch up on anything we got behind on. Because when we're traveling quickly, you know, we have all of these work obligations and we're trying to see this new city or this new place. And mm-hmm. so you start to sometimes feel like you just don't have enough time in the day. And so once we get to that point where we're like, we feel like we're not enjoying the moment as much as typically when usually about 4 or 5 weeks in mm-hmm. has been our pattern.
Yep.
We'll hunker down for 3 weeks in a city so that we can work hard for 2 weeks and then enjoy the city for 1 week before moving on.
Yep. All right. The next question comes from herewegoagain.blog. What lenses do you use now?
So we recently, back in December, switched from Nikon to Sony, and I shoot now a Sony A7 R3, and it is the best thing I've ever purchased.
It's a mirrorless camera, and it's amazing. Yeah. We have nothing bad to say about it.
I'm obsessed, a little too obsessed. I just absolutely love it. And we shoot with a 16-35 millimeter that has been awesome. Mm-hmm. And then we shoot with...
It's a Tamron 28-75 millimeter f2.8.
And it's a wonky lens because usually they're 24-70. And so this one's a 28. So it's kind of a wonky lens type. Mm-hmm. But it was, I believe, about half off of the actual Sony 24-70.
Yep.
And it shoots the same, in my opinion. It has amazing quality, amazing speed, amazing. I mean, I don't see a difference. And a lot of reviews we read didn't see a difference. So we opted mm-hmm. for that savings. And I would say I've fallen in love with my 16-35 more than I love the 28.
Mm-hmm. Those wide apertures and wide lenses just give you such a big scene to work with that, you know, that combined with the Sony's ability to really capture based on the megapixels, and you can zoom in on things if you need to. You can zoom out and have that very wide shot if you want it. So it's just a very versatile lens to be able to carry around with you.
Yes. And I think, too, the wide ends has been amazing for hotel collabs because some of our spaces are tight, especially on some of our cruise shots. And so to be able to have that really wide, wide angle has been awesome for us. But I also think the 28 or at least a normal 24 to 70 is something every photographer should have if you're traveling, because it's a beast of a lens. It can do a lot.
Yep.
So.
All right. Our last question. It's a really interesting one. It is from the Jahul Against Travel. And the question is, I've heard Mexican police are crooks and take advantage of tourists. How do you get around that? So just to give you a bit of a background, we have been traveling through Mexico basically since February. We had a cruise in between, but we've been here for, you know, about 2 months, a little over 2 months, and we haven't had any issues with police, but we have heard people that, you know, do get asked to pay some fine for something that they think they did. And there have been reports of, you know, people having success bribing police in order to be able to get away from it. But for the most part, unless, you know, Jess has said this before,
in
terms of doing things that are illegal or getting yourself in trouble, if you are in a situation in which there might be trouble around you, say, you know, if you're near drug dealers or you're out in dark streets at 3 a.m. when nothing good really happens, which for us, having kids, we're in bed, we're basically in when the sun sets.
We are not having issues.
Unless we're out at, you know, at a plaza that's well lit with a lot of people there, right? So we haven't had any issues with Mexican police.
It's also different, though, because we are Mexican. So Rod and I, Rod was born in Mexico, and I grew up for a bit in Mexico. My mom's from Mexico, so we speak fluent Spanish. I don't know if we're like the typical target, because we look like locals and we speak Spanish. So, I mean, I don't know. I know for us, a lot of people were like, you're going to be in Mexico that long. It's not safe. We haven't felt unsafe here at all. We felt very safe throughout our time. But like Rod said, we are home by 8 o'clock every night, and we aren't out at the clubs or the bar scenes. So it's like we're not in situations that would most likely cause an unfortunate event.
Yeah. And we are really excited to actually be featuring Mexico in our next episode for the podcast. So if you're a little bit more curious about where we've been in Mexico, what we recommend to you in terms of things to do, places to go, we've been here for 2 months now, and we're from here. I was born here and I come back regularly. So we are excited for next week to have a kind of a destination recap of our Mexico travels.
So to give you an idea of where we've been, because we haven't just been in Playa. So we started in Guadalajara, and then from there we moved to Ixtapa, which is a beach town on the west coast. And then from there we went to Mexico City. We took a break on a cruise, and then we came down to Playa del Carmen, where we've been able to tour Playa del Carmen. We've been able to see Tulum, island of Holbox, and Cozumel. So we've been around to quite a few places in our few months here, and we're just really excited to tell you guys the scoop.
Yeah. And where to find the best tacos, because we love tacos.
You guys, I just keep gaining weight here in Mexico. It's like, I kept telling Rod, like, I'm going to get fit in Mexico. You know, that was my goal. And then every day I eat tacos and churros. Like, that's going to help me get fit. And then I complain every day about it. I'm like, oh, I ate too many tacos again. But I can't help it. We need to, like, move on just strictly for food purposes.
Yeah, I think we're going to be sad to leave. But also not having that temptation to have to want to eat tacos every day is going to be helpful for our bellies and for our health.
Yes, it's been, ugh.
Yeah, so that about wraps it up for our mailbag episode. Thank you again to everyone that submitted your questions. As always, feel free to reach out to us if you have any more questions, if you have any comments, if you want to know you're planning a vacation and you want some tips on where to go, we can definitely help you out with that. And we're excited to feature Mexico and tell you all about our adventures here in this beautiful, beautiful country. So thanks again, and until next time,
happy jet setting.
The Podglomerate. a Sonic Universe.